Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Defense! All the hard work, let's go!
College Football Today.
Back on college.
Sound like Bobby Boucher.
Back on College Football Today, brought to you by BetDSI. Talking a little bit about the college football bowls, college football playoff. Talking about Bobby Boucher in the off camera discussion. We know that the top four teams are already in. Alabama, we have Clemson, we have Notre Dame, and we have Oklahoma. But the argument or controversy that really took place was last Sunday with which team could challenge Oklahoma as possibly cracking the college football playoff. A lot of people were on Georgia's bandwagon after they lost that close game to Alabama. Others with Ohio State and Urban Meyer winning the Big Ten championship. And, oh, there's that school in Orlando. They've just won 25 straight games. Conference champions defeated Memphis, UCF. I mean, it's an intriguing argument, guys. It really is. For me, I think when I break down those three teams, Georgia, Ohio State, UCF, I would say I would lean to Georgia. And the one reason is, you look at their 10 wins, they came against opponents with a combined overall record of 79-54. That's a 593 winning percentage. When you look at Ohio State, their 11 wins came against opponents with a combined overall record of 75-82, which was 477. And then you have UCF. Their 12 wins came against opponents with a combined overall record of 65-70, which is a 481 winning percentage. So the one knock I have about UCF, they only played 11 games this year, again, for the second year in the row because of a cancellation, so they were 12-0. I look at Ohio State. They have that 29-point loss to Georgia, to Purdue, so that stands out. But the way Georgia played against Alabama, to me, would give them the nod. Now, my question to you is, if Ohio State loses to Purdue by 10, does Oklahoma get into the college football playoff over the Buckeyes?
Well, Oklahoma's in. Do you mean would Ohio State?
No, I'm saying if Ohio State...
Oh, do they get in?
Do they get in close call? Both conference champions.
It certainly would have been more palatable. I mean, I think the fact that it's was 49-20, I think
questionable.
That hurt.
Here's the thing. That Texas-Oklahoma game that Oklahoma lost, that was a heck of a football game. And even like, when you think about, like, and I'm going to segue, you think about just the Heisman and what you do. Kyler Murray played exceptional in that game. He had some turnovers early, but the kid played really well in that game. I just don't know if it was Purdue. Like, that's a rivalry game. And it could go either way. Emotions, big plays, where are you playing? And then they redeem the loss.
Right.
Because they got a chance to play them again.
Both on a neutral field, too.
Right. And I would still give it to Oklahoma. I would stick with Oklahoma, but this UCF thing, man, I came from a small school, played at a small school. It's bothering me what it's saying about the playoff system and just the hierarchy of football. And SEC commissioner came out and said, you know, hey, their schedule this week, blah, blah, blah. I don't see any of them SEC schools trying to line up UCF for a non-conference game. I don't hear any of them saying, hey, come play us. We'll do a home and away. None of them are trying to play that game.
Yeah. It reminds me of Boise State. Boise State had the problem in the past where Boise was, you know, regardless of what they did under Chris Peterson, you know, they weren't going to get into a BCS type of a discussion, and nobody wanted to play that team. I mean, and that's what happens. And it goes to Gonzaga in basketball. You could talk about it at any level. You know, nobody wants to face UCF, which makes for some interesting storylines.
Well, the Power Five conferences, this is how they manipulate how to keep their teams in the bowl. If you allow one UCF team to get in, then who says that some small San Diego State don't have a chance?
Or that's a great point.
Once you allow one team to get in because of, you know, who they played, you know, it's like I say this, and I mean no disrespect to the rest of the teams, but the Patriots play the AFCs every year, and those three teams, they've been bad for a long time. We don't say anything to them.
Right.
You play the teams that are on your schedule. You get to pick some non-conference games, and we don't get mad at Alabama for playing Troy. You play some weaker teams to kind of get where you want to get in conference. So let's not knock them, because I don't see those Power Five teams or the SEC teams trying to schedule UCF.
Yeah, that's a great point. Although Florida did come out after all this controversy and said, "Would we be willing?" But they haven't done it yet to do a home and home. So that's the first.
Do you understand what that would mean for Florida?
Yeah, of course, they would lose recruits.
They're already having an issue.
Yeah,
them and Florida State with getting Florida's top players.
Right.
You would really lose out if you lose to a UCF.
I agree.
There's no winning it for Florida.
No.
Well, to Marshall's point, I think the only way to rectify this situation, guys, and I know you don't like it, is to expand the playoffs. You're not getting UCF in with four.
No,
with four.
I do have a solution. And I think Marshall brings up a great point, because I do feel the kids are deserving. The problem I have is because it is amateurism. I don't want to take away from the college football regular season.
No,
I don't
I
want
agree.
To dilute it to
I
where,
agree.
Like college basketball, where we have 18 teams or mm-hmm. eight teams, and then it's team 9 and 10. And now, you know what? Oklahoma, Texas is taking place, you know, week number 5, and they're walking through the motions because they already have a guaranteed spot. But I'll put a proponent or a provision in for a non-group of 5 team to get in. Like this year, if there's all one-loss teams or not enough undefeated teams to make the college football playoff, and there is a group of 5 team that is undefeated, they get in. So like this year, where we're splitting hairs between the 4th, if that were the case again, then if there's an undefeated non-group of 5, we put them in.
You know who deserves this too is not just UCF and all the group of 5s, but I really think college fans deserve to see this. I mean, instead of constantly debating this, I mean, I sort of think I know what would happen if it was Alabama, UCF, but after 2 years of debating, if UCF was number 4, I'd like to see that game. I really would, because I think it's going to be a bloodbath against Oklahoma. I do. I think Alabama is going to house Oklahoma, so I'd rather see UCF have that opportunity. I'm not dying for 8 teams, because to be honest, this year, I really only think 3 teams deserve to be in the playoffs. I really do. I would take Oklahoma out. I think ND's perfect season, Clemson perfect season, Alabama perfect season. I think those 3 teams in the playoffs. So I don't need to see 8, but there are some instances where I'd like to see those teams have opportunities. A couple of things. Ohio State is not in my opinion, not just because of Purdue. It's game control all season long.
Yeah.
I think the committee looked hard at Maryland. They looked hard at the Nebraska game. They looked hard at the Indiana game. They didn't until we got to Michigan. And then Northwestern in the Big Ten. And they were struggling at times against North. But a lack of game control all season long, I think that's what really did Ohio State in. And my second point is, in terms of Georgia, we talk about precedent with a group of 5. The committee did not want to set a precedent with Georgia being a 2-loss non-conference champion. But the question still has to be asked, do we really want the 4 best teams? Because if we're saying the 4 best teams belong in the playoffs, in my opinion, Georgia is one of those teams.
But you can't discount that loss, right, Marshall? I mean, they got
LSU,
blown out in Baton Rouge, and it wasn't even under the lights, right? You know the Tigers play better at night than they do during the day.
It's just hard for to make a case for Georgia. I mean, I get it. You got a 1-loss Oklahoma team. People wanted Georgia in. They say Georgia deserved the chance. And I guess you they didn't want to count the loss to Alabama because it didn't feel like a loss because I guess Alabama's better. So, let's just not count that game. Right. But you can't do that. And my thing is, and this is why college sports bother me. This is why the playoffs bother me. This is the whole bowl hierarchy. Give the underdog a chance. Just give them a chance. Like they need a chance. This is why in basketball they went to that. Okay, we're going to have these teams play before we decide who the teams are to go in the bracket. So you go have a playoffs. There's some extra games we're going to play. Some teams from small schools. We're going to figure this out. You got to give the underdog a chance because you never know. Those kids from UCF, they could end up having a day, and Alabama could have their worst day. You never know. Right. Don't take their chance of having the chance away by not putting them in. Just by saying, oh, you played Weber State. You played Little Sisters of the Poor. It doesn't matter. How many games do they have to win before they let you know, hey, we want to see if we can compete with the big boys.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll tell you, I thought it would be last year that they would have a better chance because they defeated Auburn last year. Auburn went to the SEC championship. Auburn knocked off Georgia and Alabama, both top-tier teams when they defeated them. So I thought this year they would have a better opportunity, and they're still on the outside looking in. I'll say this. If they defeat LSU convincingly... Yeah. Yep. Convincingly, 20
or
points.
At all, Joe.
At all, I know, but no Greedy Williams. I think it's got to be by I would say 10.
At all.
I wouldn't put a number on it.
At all.
Yeah, I agree. So? I agree.
At all.
But then next year's the year.
It's LSU. It's LSU coming off a really solid season.
There's no year. It's not happening.
If you've beaten Auburn and LSU in back-to-back bowl games. And perfect seasons, back-to-back seasons. Man, they're going to have a heck of a beef. They really are.
And deserving.
And how about this? Forget Greedy Williams is sitting out. And, Devin White says he's...
And Del Pitt might be.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Mackenzie Milton not playing.
Right.
So now you're using your backup redshirt freshman quarterback in Darryl Mack. Definitely out.
Without a doubt.
Now, Darryl Mack...
he stepped up last week.
There's a quarterback issue there if they had one. Because the kid came out and played a heck of a game.
And we expected that. We talked a lot on the air last weekend about the expectations. I know Gabe even said, Gabe got fired up and he's like, Josh Heupel's a quarterback. He's going to be able to talk to this kid. And you could tell that young kid, got better and had a couple of fumbles early, but he got more confident as that game went on. That was a hell of a comeback.
And Josh had the kid ready for the moment. He understood, this is where your nerves are going to be. This is how you're going to feel. Calmed him down, and the kid played it. He played a heck of a game. I was impressed. I thought he would play well. He played better than I thought.
Yeah, he really did. And the one thing I think when I watched UCF play over recent weeks is against Cincinnati, and then they won that bowl game against Memphis, the conference championship. When they fall behind, they do not lose their composure.
No.
They did it against Temple. They maintain, and that was with Milton at the helm. When East Carolina, they were on the road with Mack, he stepped up. They made plays. This team expects to make enough plays to win
that's good coaching.
The ball game.
That's good coaching. That's good coaching. That's when you understand you have a game plan, and when that game plan is not working, you understand where you're going. Because that's football. It's the chess match. Okay, this is how we want to attack them. Oh, they're doing something different. Okay, now this is how we're going to attack them. And they have no problem whether it's on the ground or throwing the ball or even just as a front seven playing stout defense.
Yeah, I think in a one game scenario, we've seen it. Boise State step up over Oklahoma. I think it's the consistency of the season, but I think that UCF matches up well against Notre Dame. I think they can move the football on Notre Dame in a college football playoff environment. Now, Clemson and Alabama, to me, are different animals on the interior, but you never know. I mean, if they jump up Oklahoma, I'd say that score would have to be in the 60s. Kyler Murray and UCF's offense going up against each other would be pretty intriguing.
Well, I just want to piggyback on something that Marshall said, too, is give them a chance. And if you look at the history of sports, we've been either around sports, covering sports our entire lives, It's those moments that we always remember, right? It's NC State and Jim Valvano. Those are the moments we remember in sports. So, you know, it's not only good for that one team, but the entire sort of ecosystem of sports benefits when these smaller schools are able to pull off, given an opportunity to make a magical moment. We remember those times.
Allow the UTEP Miners to play the Kentucky Wildcats and see what happens.
Yeah.
You just never know how it could change.
They make movies out of, right? That's Don Glory Haskins. Rose. I mean, that. So they make movies out of those moments.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Allow the opportunity to happen. Give it a chance. Don't just put it to bed just because you want to get one of your schools in. You got to allow these kids a chance.
Well, I think this year will be the year. If they knock off LSU and they're undefeated,
I'll be riveted
again,
to that Fiesta Bowl because
it's a moneymaker, too. You know that TV. March Madness is a billion-dollar industry from the brackets to the TV rights.
I mean, what were they, eighth? Eighth?
Eighth.
That's it? Like, that's it.
Michigan was over them, which eighth? Is that's a little bit
after
of a,
the loss to Ohio State, Michigan, they're eighth? That's... What do you got to do? That's what they. So what do we have to do?
Last year's bowl game, I think to a lot of people, I would even include myself in that. It felt a little bit, I don't know. It felt a little bit fluky, maybe. Like I even said. I remember saying like, you know what, Auburn.
Are they going to take that seriously?
They weren't serious. They weren't motivated. But this year, UCF is on everyone's radar.
Yes. Here's my question: how can you not take a bowl game serious?
I agree with you. That's the mindset.
Your last game was like a month ago. That's all you've been practicing for is this one game. How do you not? I mean, is that a knock on the head coach for not making sure his guys are mentally invested in why you're there?
Yeah.
This is why you're at it. They say you come to get a degree. No, you're there to win football games.
They don't make the mentality, Marshall. You know that even in the NFL, it's a different mindset. It's no longer the team mentality. It's about me, my interest. You know, the bowl game, you sweat, you do two-a-days, you go to spring ball. It's a year-round investment, but it's a year-round investment for them. It's not. That's the way I look at it.
The antithesis is going to be Army Navy. Yeah. Army Navy is all about.
Oh, I can't wait for it. I love this game.
It's all about love, right? It's all about weight.
Exactly.
I love watching those kids play in this game. It means the world to me.
So when we come back, we'll be breaking down Army Navy and we'll be breaking down North Dakota State and Colgate. Keep it where it is.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Morenci leading us into break. Welcome to College Football Today, brought to you by BetDSI.
Inspired by that.
Yeah, I do. I feel it.
It's Morenci.
It is. Well, Morenci would love the East games.
Is this Morenci on the bump? Is that Morenci? Oh, wow.
Wow.
That is pretty good. That
sounds pretty good.
I like it. Scaring me.
I'm going to put it on. We'll put it on in the break. We'll listen to it. But Morenci's going to love the breakdowns of the FCS games that kick off at 12 o'clock. Huge battle. Gabe, huge battle. North Dakota State, number one in FCS, taking on number 9, Colgate. Very intriguing battle, guys. You have Easton Stick quarterback for North Dakota State that has thrown 22 touchdown passes. We have Lance Dunn, the running back, more of a thunder and lightning type of crew with Anderson. Both of those players have combined for 22 touchdowns. And then we have Shepard, the wide receiver, that's stepping up, does have six receiving touchdowns. This is a North Dakota State defense that's allowing 108 rushing yards per game, 184 passing yards per game, but they're going up against a very methodical offense in Colgate. But more importantly, the number one ranked statistical defense in FCS, yeah, allowing 219 total yards per game.
Wow.
Not going to be easy.
7 points per game.
Not going to be that? Easy.
Wow.
But here's what I look at, guys. Seniors, senior leadership at the quarterback position. Two running backs that are seniors.
It's unheard of.
Senior wide receiver. I'm taking North Dakota State.
You're laying the points with the Bison.
Colgate today.
Paste. Yes. I love paste. It. A little. You see what, yes, he did there? With the paste?
I got
little
it.
Colgate Palm Olive reference.
It's the Alabama of FCS, and I'm not backing down. I learned my lesson at the FBS level,
yeah,
and I'm back in North Dakota State.
Alabama you'll never take, but you'll take the Bison of North Dakota State. Six national championships, Marshall, in the
impressive
last 7 years.
Impressive.
Coaching change from Craig Bowl to Chris Klayman. You're right, senior leadership, but... Yeah, I have a hard time betting against that Colgate defense. I don't think they pull the upset. I don't think the Raiders get the upset, but they're allowing 7 points per game, five shutouts this season. Five shutouts. Pass defense. Listen to this. This sounds like numbers that I'm pulling out of 1953.
Go ahead.
They've allowed two touchdown passes all season and have 15 interceptions. Now, the competition level in the Patriot League, I know the Patriot League very well, back from my old days at Campus Insiders, did a lot of sideline reporting.
Okay.
Holy Cross, Fordham games, right. Joe Moorhead. Different level of competition, I understand that, but that kind of defense, TJ Hole and that defense allowing just 7 points per
That's
game.
Impressive.
I think it's enough to at least get the cover. They're getting 20. I'm going to take Colgate. Give me the Raiders plus 24.5.
We're going to have a side bet.
A little FCS side bet.
Marshall.
Yeah, North Dakota State for me. I'm going with the factory.
It's just
what they do. I mean, they know how to win games, and just imagine if they score two early pass touchdowns against Colgate, does that just shock them? Is that a shock to their system?
I think it's over because I don't think Colgate has the offense to rally.
There you go.
Yeah. This game, if I had to make an FBS comp, what are you laughing for? What are you smiling for?
I like
this is like
comps.
This would be Alabama versus who would be a good defensive team that struggles to score? Maybe like Fresno.
LSU.
I was going to say Fresno because Colgate's smaller school with the Patriots. Yeah, like a Patriot League. So I'm thinking group of five. I would say like this is like an Alabama Fresno game.
Okay.
If you want to
play Temple would
maybe
be.
I thought Temple too, where they have some problems offensively, but defensively very gritty. Northeast team, Colgate from the state of New York. Yeah, I think this would be like Alabama Temple.
Well, I think when you look at this matchup from an offensive perspective for Colgate now, their quarterback Brenneman only has six touchdown passes. They rely on their running back Holland that has over 1,100 rushing yards, averaging 5.9 yards per carry. So they're going to want to establish the run and keep that offense on the sidelines. We'll see how it plays out. It's a 12 o'clock kick. When a total perspective, very low though, guys,
yeah.
42.
Yeah.
So they're not expecting a lot of points, whether North Dakota State dominates this matchup. I could see it being in the area
of
35-7.
Would you take the over?
I
would.
From what I've seen in North Dakota State, I think they can move the football. But Colgate, they're going to need to establish the run and keep that offense on the sideline. So
I would go under because Colgate, their job, they're going to slow down the game.
Yeah.
They want to slow it down. They're going to have long drives. And they want to make sure that when North Dakota State takes the field, like, oh, we got to score. Oh, we haven't had the ball. Oh, we're out of rhythm. That's what they want to do. They want to slow this game down.
You know what I love about North Dakota State? Because, you know, I get a
unis.
Little... The unis are nice. Right. I get a little bit tweaked sometimes when FCS programs decide to elevate to the FBS. They have resisted that temptation. You know, they decided to stay in the Big Sky. You know, we're like the UConn women's basketball of FCS football. They're dominant. They're content with that. They've had opportunities to move to conferences like the Sun Belt. maybe Conference USA, and they're like, nah, you know what? We're happy where we are. We have a really good thing going here. Right. We're sending the Carson Wentzes to the NFL every so often. They know their brand and their identity, and I'm glad that they've stayed put in the FCS.
Yeah, and you look at North Dakota State. I mean, in recent years, they knocked off teams like Kansas State, like Iowa. So you're talking about a team that looks to step up and make a statement. So they're not going to fear Colgate in that battle. It should be pretty interesting.
Jamie brought it up too. Colgate went toe-to-toe with Army just a couple of weeks ago, lost 28-14. That's a 9-2 Army team. That's a solid, you know, maybe like mid-level 60th. What are you laughing about?
Because I'm thinking of
the perfect matchup.
I was going to throw it out to Marshall. It's a long way away from the days of Kenny Gamble back in Colgate.
You know, Marshall just said in the last segment, this is why we play these games. Exactly. Like, I want to see Colgate have that shot as a 24-point dog.
There you go.
Put him
out there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that game plays out. The other intriguing battle is South Dakota State, ranked number 2 in FCS, going up against Kennesaw State. They're ranked number 5. Very intriguing battle again. When I break this game down, Christian, the quarterback, has thrown for 26 touchdown passes, but it's to a big play wide receiver crew here. Anderson and Johnson for South Dakota State. I mean, combined 105 receptions, 22 receiving touchdowns. They're big. They remind me of Colin Johnson and Lil Jordan Humphrey for Texas going up against a smaller defensive secondary. I'm laying the wood here. I am.
Are you really?
I'm laying the 7.5. I think they have the better offense, quarterback with Christian at the quarterback position. And Kennesaw State, so a methodical offense, averaging 369 rushing yards per game. If they can't run it, they could be behind the sticks. And that's why I'm taking South Dakota State in this ballgame.
There are 3 Division I college football programs that have 10-game winning streaks in each of the last 2 years. I'm not going to quiz anybody, but I will tell you, one is Alabama. Mm-hmm. UCF is the other. The third is Kennesaw State.
Okay.
And what fascinates me about this program, I actually started, not for this segment, but I actually started to study. I was tipped off about Kennesaw State a couple of years ago. The head coach, Brian Bohannon, former Georgia wide receiver, this program started in 2015. They had no football prior to 2015, and now they're in the FCS playoffs. They run a triple option offense. Bohannon is a Paul Johnson disciple. Paul Johnson just stepped away from Georgia Tech. The reason why I like Kennesaw State, they're a home dog getting a touchdown, but South Dakota State hasn't seen the option in years. And I saw it's such a different type of an offense. Now, South Dakota State almost upset North Dakota State earlier this year. This is a very good football team. But traveling to Georgia, no experience versus the option, the excitement that they'll see at Kennesaw State, I think they pull the upset. I think they win this game outright.
Yeah, the reason why I don't like Kennesaw State is everything revolves around their quarterback.
Chandler Burks.
I mean, he has 10 touchdowns through the air, 6 interceptions, but 871 rushing yards, 29 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, leads the country.
So if you could take him out of the offense, now Marshall could attest to this. Facing the triple option is a lot different in game speed than it is in practice preparation, especially if it's zone blocking type of schemes. Those defense alignment and more importantly, defensive tackles will have to disrupt running lanes, and that's not so easy when you go up against an offense in Kennesaw State.
The responsibility of your defensive tackle, your middle linebacker, and your outside linebackers are important. They have to stay home. They got to read their keys. And as much as you want to chase the football or where you think the football is going, you have to read your keys. You got to read your guard when he's down blocking or if he's pulling the tackle. If that tackle allowed a defensive end to go and he slipped up, they're optioning that guy. So as a linebacker, you got to get out. You got to stay outside contained. That's the hardest part for a lot of defensive players. You get so amped up. You're in a bowl game. You want to go make plays. And you play against one of these triple option teams. And that ball, you don't know if it's in the belly of the dive back, going to the pitch back, or does the quarterback keep it? And just if that tight end, when he's releasing to go get the strong safety, if that safety comes up and that ball goes over his head, I mean, there's so many elements to the triple option that as a defender, you have to stay disciplined and read your keys. And early in this game, who you're going to watch. They're going to slip some guys by. They might throw a pass. You might get a dive back hitting his head on the goalpost just because some defensive tackle is following the football.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, and that's why when we talk about Army Navy, it's very intriguing.
Yes.
Because you have kids fighting for four quarters, and these kids at the FCS level too. These playoffs mean something to them. I mean, it's not a bowl
game.
That's
one of the things I like about it.
You know, yeah. A situation.
Bowl games. Sometimes we have to dissect. We have to, you know, are they motivated? Are they not? Who's playing? Who's not? The FCS playoffs. Everybody's all in. This is for a national championship. So when we get to December. Outside of the two semifinal games, which we know will be, you know, heightened attention and heightened anticipation, these FCS playoff games, I know they're not familiar names, you know, Jackrabbits, you know.
How many teams get in? How many teams get in there?
I think 16, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It's a 16.
It's not diluted.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's right.
It's not diluted.
And they do it. You know, I heard Mike Leach talk about this the other day. You know, we do something crazy at the Division III level. It's called the College Football Playoff, yeah. And somehow, some way,
it's not diluted. You
know, he's right. I agree.
I agree with you as well. There has to be some kind of a balance. I don't want to mess with the regular season. I think in college football, we have the best regular season in any sport. I mean, the excitement that you have week after week, the meaning week after week is awesome. So I don't want to screw with that. But there might be a way to tinker with the playoffs a little bit so that we have the best of both worlds.
You'll see it after this year, I think. I think after this year, Ohio State now, second year in a row where they're left out of the college football.
Three straight years, the Big Ten champ has not been in the playoffs.
So that's going to be a lot of rumblings for, you know, when it's a Power 5 team, it's okay.
Well, sure.
You know,
because they have the clout and the money.
We're Power 5. We were,
they get to throw their weight around.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean to tell me we were left out of the college football?
So all you got to do is just invite more teams. You're going to make a lot of people happy.
Exactly. Well, you know
and,
who?
And actually, NC2A, you're going to make a lot more money.
Right.
Like
TV will be happy. More games, you know, more revenue, more
sponsorship. People will complain about eight teams, but you know what? They'll be still watching.
Yeah. And the execs will.
They're not going to. It was like last year when everybody was, you know, everybody was all upset because two SEC teams in the national championship.
The most
ratings were the highest ever.
30 million people.
Didn't turn people away.
So that should be intriguing. Last game on the docket is Eastern Washington going up against UC Davis that faced Stanford. Now, the one thing that I am concerned about is when I broke down Eastern Washington, multiple quarterback play. Now, this is still an offense that's averaging close to 265 passing yards per game, but a lot of injuries. They have a lot of depth, but they're utilizing a lot of players. So I am concerned about the offensive continuity heading into this battle. The one thing I think that I still like Eastern Washington is they have a balanced offense, a better defense than UC Davis. UC Davis has given up 187 rushing yards per game. To me, that's the difference. Meyer, their quarterback, has completed over 60% of his passes, but I'm laying the 9 points with Eastern Washington in this ballgame.
Yeah, we're in agreement in this one, and you just have to go back a couple of weeks and watch the tape, watch the game between EWU and UC Davis. They played at Eastern Washington back in November, and the Eagles won 59-20. So, you know, I'm not saying the game will be as lopsided as that first meeting was, but you know, yeah, they're down an All-American quarterback. Gage Gubrud is out for the season, so Eric Berriere has come in and done a nice job. But they had the recipe for beating UC Davis. They completely shut down Meyer and Keelan Doss, who leads FCS with 109 receptions. So, you know, I love the coach of UC. You know, it's coaching UC Davis these days.
That I don't know.
Dan Hawkins.
Oh, Dan Hawkins. Former Boise. And people have said, let me just say this quickly about Dan Hawkins. It wasn't Chris Peterson that brought Boise. He took Boise to the next level.
Yeah.
It was Dan Hawkins that went to Colorado, couldn't get it done, and gave way to John
Emery.
Which
was such a surprise to me. I mean, he did such a good job at Boise
State.
That
was his recruiting
hotbed. I thought he was going to be a good
fit
at Colorado, and he couldn't get it done.
That's where he recruited, Marshall, not to get your take on this game as well, but when you see these players about FCS, I see Tariq Cohen lighting it up for the Bears, NC A&T, North Carolina A&T.
HBCU, baby.
Yep. Yeah. The smaller schools, we've seen Chase Clemens last year for Fordham. Now he's having great success with Arizona. Other small players. you can find NFL talent here.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, this is where, I mean, teams are made at this level.
And here's what I'm going to say. I say kudos to the guys coming from the small schools. And usually when teams draft them, they play well. You don't have a bus. If a guy is playing well, he's not playing with other five-star athletes and he's hitting. You rarely have a guy come from one of the small schools and at the next level, they're a bus. They might get injured. They might not, maybe can't handle the physicality of the game when they come to the next level. But for the most part, when that guy, when you put him on the field with other talent, he like Tariq Cohn, he rises up, like Carson Wentz. They rise up. They rise up to the occasion.
Yeah, it's incredible.
They have that chip on their shoulder a lot of times because, you know, once in a while you'll have a Power 5 transfer go to the FCS for more playing time or whatever reason. But oftentimes these are kids who were under-recruited. These are kids who were overlooked out of high school. And that chip on their shoulder that they have, they carry right into their NFL career. You know, you mentioned players in the NFL, Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
His brother plays for Eastern Washington, one of their top defenders. And EWU's got 6 defensive touchdowns this year. So, you know, some interesting games as we get close. Maine is in. Maine won last night. Maine won. In the semifinals. So we'll wait to see who the other 3 teams are.
Quickly, Marshall, I mean, I feel like the offense and defense aligns in the NFL. This is where teams get it. This is where they get these players.
And you got to get them from somewhere. They make their moves by going there.
Yeah, so when we come back, we'll be talking about the big game today, Army and Navy. Keep it where it is. Jolisi Ritzer-Manello and Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk live from Studio 34.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
We are back just 20 minutes from the kickoff of Colgate and North Dakota State as the FCS playoffs continue. Folks, the DailyRoto.com NBA lineup optimizer is now available. That means that you can use the same tools and projections that DailyRoto.com NFL premium subscribers are using to win each and every week, but now you could do it for NBA DFS contests. DailyRoto.com has produced 7 separate FanDuel and DraftKings millionaires during million-dollar tournaments, and even more in cumulative prizes. If you're playing daily fantasy sports and you aren't using the Daily Roto tools, projections, and optimizers, you're doing it all wrong, and you're at a competitive disadvantage. So go to DailyRoto.com and click on Go Premium. Enter the promo code FNTSY for a special discount and start winning today. That's DailyRoto.com. Click on Go Premium, enter the promo code FNTSY for a special discount, and start winning today.
Wow, very impressive read.
It's comeback time. I mean, if you had a bad college football NFL season, get it back in the NBA. Right or wrong? Raptors, I mean, that's what you do.
Raptors lost to the Nets last night, and all I know is I caught that on ESPN briefly. Nets had an 8-game losing streak and snapped it as a 9-point
underdog. What color
underdog.
Are the Nets uniforms these
they
days?
They were black and white, but they had some special soccer unis on yesterday.
I'm so off basketball these days. At Nets, I'm thinking like John Williamson.
Wow.
That's going back.
Dr. J is still on the Nets?
Of course. I think Doc was playing for the Nets when they were like in Piscataway.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Well, I'm a much older man than you. I remember this stuff.
Yeah, well, basketball's not my forte. Is Luke Karnaseka still with St. John's or no?
I used to love the Knicks right around the corner at the Garden. Yeah. That's where I spent a lot of my wasted youth was at MSG.
Anthony Mason and I saw Oak
John
play
Starks,
back in the day.
Yeah.
John Starks, forget it. Great. He's fantastic. He is one of the best all-time Knicks, you know, for the way he played.
My 2 all-time favorite Knicks, not that anybody cares, Bob McAdoo.
And
Bernard King.
Can you get this? this century? You know,
no, that's last century.
That's the problem.
That's last century.
That's the problem.
That is the problem.
Right.
Is, you know, at least I loved Anthony Mason. I liked the old Chris
Mason.
Mark Jackson.
Your face.
You're talking about like you're right.
We're the same age. Yeah, but
you're talking about like the lunch pail guys. Like yeah. they did the dirty work.
I'm a blue collar guy. Don't let the jacket kid you.
Okay, so you're not gonna go with Ewan or Mark Jackson
I love Jackson though too. St. John's product.
Dirty work.
I like Mark Jackson.
I liked Oakley.
I like that whole team. The whole makeup of that team. There was so much grit. You know, there was so much blue collar work ethic. They were.
That's when you could hack somebody, by the way, too. You can't
hack. You could do more than hack.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing. That's when football was football, too. That's when, you know,
it was football on hardwood.
Football like we're watching each and every day. But they're going to let them play today in Philadelphia between Army and Navy. I mean, this rivalry is unprecedented.
Yeah.
Navy does lead the series by a total margin of 60-51 and 7 ties. But they've lost 2 straight to the Cadets. This is a Cadet offense that's averaging 303 rushing yards per game. They're averaging close to 72 yards through the air. And Navy does have one of the worst rushing defenses since 2014, giving up 189 rushing yards per game. But guess what? They're +8 in turnover margin.
Mm.
And when you could create turnovers, you have an opportunity. Give me Navy +6.5 outright over the Cadets.
Yeah, I like Army. I'm going to buck a little bit. I mean, most of these games are very close. 6 of the last 7 meetings between the academies decided by a touchdown or less. The line in this game is a touchdown. I mentioned with Jamie in our second segment, the last 12 battles between Army and Navy all have gone under, so we don't expect a lot of scoring. Army to me today, and Army over the past couple of years, is Navy, but a much better version than Navy. And what Army does, if you're going to run the triple option, you know, what makes it doubly difficult is when you control the ball. And right now, Army leads the entire country in time of possession. Their ability to milk the clock, to wear out defenses. One of the reasons why Army is so good statistically on defense, not only do they have good linebackers, but they hold the ball. No defense has played fewer plays this year than Army. So Army is fresh. Army is talented. Army is rolling. They have a shot for the first time ever to have a 10-win season. I like Army to cover this game. Not a blowout, but I would say between 10 and 13 points.
Clearly the better team, Marshall. I'm going to throw 2 statistics at you that to Rich's point. Army converting 57% on third downs and holding opposing offenses to 27% on third downs. And oh, by the way, they're +5 in turnover margin.
Yeah, all of those things, it points to Army. But there's something about Navy in game in big games, and you put them under the light, you put them on a spotlight, and they tend to just shine and they show up. And not to mention, this is like Navy's been awful at stopping the run. Well, if you run the triple option, guess what you know how to stop? The triple option.
Right.
They'll be ready. They will be ready to play today. This game has so much more of a meaning to these Cadets than they do to us. I just love watching them go out and play with the passion that they play with. And it's funny. It was like, wow, this game is the game that the players on the field would put their lives and die. For the people watching the players on the field, it's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
But these guys, man, it's an honor to watch this game. It definitely is.
It's incredible because I wonder for 2 things. I wonder if Marshall Faulk played in a triple option offense, how many yards would he have in college? The second thing is what you and I have spoken about. Can you win at the FBS level outside Naval and Army, Navy Academy schools, Air Force? Can you win at an elite level? Because Paul Johnson, and we talked about this, Paul Johnson stepping away as head coach from Georgia Tech, got it to a respectable level at 7-5 overall, and 1 or 2 years did go to a bowl game against Mississippi State and dominated. But again, at the end of the day, can you be an elite program running the triple option?
No, I would say Elite level, no. I mean, I don't think you're going to win national championships these days by running the option. Where I think it's valuable is when we look at these academies. Army and Navy are not getting the same caliber of athlete as elite programs. The way you have a difference maker, the way you can narrow the gap is by running an offense that most opposing defenses are not accustomed to. So Army and Navy has been able to be competitive for such a long period of time, not in spite of, but because of those offenses. I think if they were running a pro style, they just wouldn't get the caliber of kids to compete. And I think it would be messy on a week-to-week basis. And that's why if you're an Army or Navy or an Air Force, or if you're a Kansas, if you're Les Miles, you know, I could see Les Miles coming up with a more triple option based offense and taking Kansas not to an elite level, but instead of being 2-10 every year, I think you could be the team that no one wants to face. No one wants to face the triple option. And if you have a program like Kansas or an academy, I think it's I think it's something you can utilize.
Well, we saw Kansas State give a variation of that in terms of ground and pound and run the football.
And it worked.
With Bill Snyder, right.
Right, so, with mobile quarterbacks.
Exactly. Yeah. So in the Big 12, Marshall, you saw the one game that Kyler Murray and the crew struggled. They were locked 21 apiece against Army and had to pull that game out in overtime. Could this be something of a transition that we could see maybe Les Miles doing in the Big 12 against these high-octane offenses that don't play a stitch of defense?
If you run the triple option, if Alabama ran the triple option, they'd be just as successful. I mean, when you have the talent, it really doesn't matter what offense you decide to run. You are going to somehow, some way be elite. And think about it. If Jalen Hurts was running a triple option at Alabama,
lethal.
He'd have a lot of the rush yards. But the thing is, when they decided to throw, oh my God, it would be so open because you have to commit to stopping Hurt. You would have to commit to stopping him in the triple option. So would it work? Yes. And I agree with both of you guys. It is so different in football. You actually have to practice. Like when you have a triple option team on your schedule, every week you have to work on certain things in your schedule for the triple option. So when you get there, your players understand, like, we taught you this. We worked on this because it's so different than what we see. It would be just like the spread option, in a sense, what it has done, it kind of leveled the playing field. The triple option levels the playing field because now you chew up clock, you slow down the game, you make the game a must score or a one score game. And today's quarterbacks, today's offenses in college, they're not used to playing in games like that. I mean, they're used to 80 plays a game. If you only get 40 plays on offense, your offensive coordinator has no idea what to run. It just shortens the game. It makes it tough for you on the opposite side of the ball. The other offensive coordinator, you're like, okay, we have to get a first down. If we give the ball back, they're going to eat up more clock.
Yeah, the margin of error is completely shot at that point. One question I wanted to ask Marshall real quick. Why is it, I hear it a lot of times where, you know, coaches will say our defensive linemen hate facing the triple option, they're kind of like blocks. Ankle biters, right? What kind of blocks are they facing from an offensive line that runs a triple option that is so damn frustrating for those defensive linemen?
As a defensive lineman, you two things. You have to be assignment. I mean, the penetration into the backfield, you create a crease. You actually have to play on the same level. So it's kind of like two gapping. You have to stand the offensive lineman up, because what they want to do is once you get your responsibility and assignment, then it's stay on your feet, because they want to cut you. They want to get you down. If they can get you down and that ball is going outside or the quarterback gets you flanked, it's so hard to stop the option. Every run game, non-option, it's about defense, setting the edge, getting to the point of attack. Well, against the option, guess what they want you to do? They want you to set the edge. They want to option it off the edge that's being set. So it plays so different. Your outside guys, they have to hold. You got to allow the quarterback to come to you. You don't want to attack the quarterback too early, because if you attack the quarterback too early, the pitch happens. Now, your feel or contain guy, if he's not in position, he's out of position, you get outflanked.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You have to play so different. Every defensive tackle is taught, get upfield, get in the backfield, you're disruptive. If you get upfield, you get in the backfield versus the option, you could literally outrun by the dive back.
Yeah.
So it's so different.
It's playing chess in a checkers world, basically. Yeah.
And they take advantage of overly aggressive defenses. The one thing that LT back in the day was he would come from the backside and tackle the ball carrier. You see it time and time again in college football where defensive ends want to go down the line of scrimmage. So that's what the triple option, especially misdirection, they do a counter option where they fake the dive one way, they get the defensive end out of position, and then they come back backside and they have clear running room because they have the pitch man coming in motion. So it's incredible. They're so disciplined that they've been running it each and every year that they do it better. I mean, these two schools do it better than anyone.
And they both see it in practice. They both see it throughout the year. So they both know the nuances, the different wrinkles in the offense. So, you know, when you have that opportunity, and we used to see it with Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech had some great wide receivers, even during the triple option days, right? They had, you know, the Stephen Hills. Calvin Johnson, I think, was pre-triple option.
Yeah, he was with Reggie Ball.
But, I mean, they've had some really good wide receivers because those guys, A, they know how to block downfield. Every one of the receivers in this offense know how to block downfield. And B, their average yards per catch oftentimes is off the charts, like 25 and north.
Right, it's crazy. And the one thing I think when you see college football now, and the one thing I can't stand is kids quitting in the second half. You know, they're down by 25 points, arm tackles, they're walking back to the huddle. You're not going to see that no matter what the score is later today, because both of these schools, even though they're on the same side, because they're giving their time
representing and, you know, the military,
representing the military. But at the end of the day, they do not like each other. Yeah. It is traditionally the worst rival. I mean, this is a hatred.
What
rivalry.
I've always said too, I've been asked this for years. You know, what's the most heated rivalry? What's the most meaningful rivalry? For me, it's always Army Navy. And one of the things I always point to is not just the hatred between the players, but how many college football games, how many sporting events can you say has meaning in Afghanistan?
Right.
Or in Iraq, or all over the planet.
It's like the
you're
going
to have people.
It is. I was just about to say that. It is watched like the Super Bowl is watched. Its game is.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they set it aside.
I totally agree.
You know, it used to be like part of the other games.
Totally agree.
Now it's
this
front
game
and
deserves
center stage.
Its own Saturday. Yeah,
it really does.
You know what? Going back to the option. The option, and I'm not talking about the triple option. The option in general, right. It is so difficult and so hard to stop. The NFL, it has made its way to the NFL. If you watch today's quarterback, I mean, outside of the normal guys dropping back to Drew Brees and Brady, they're not really running it. But most quarterbacks in the league today, they are running a variation. If that defensive end, if they're running a zone read and that defensive end crashed down, quarterback's out the back door with the ball. That's how hard it is to stop the option. And now you have to assign a guy to the quarterback, which means you're making them play 11 on 11.
Right. That's
we've never had an athletic quarterback. I'm thinking Kurt Warner, Peyton.
Well, Harbaugh was somewhat mobile.
I'd give Harbaugh.
Was Trent Green?
No.
No.
Was not a runner.
Yeah.
Was not really a runner.
Was Robert Holcomb on your team?
Yeah.
Former Illini, Robert Holcomb. Yeah. He was big. He had big arms. He had big arms. I like those.
Yeah.
You know, big burly.
He was he was the backup halfback.
Right.
When I got there, and then he moved to fullback.
Right. Holcomb was big back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you think about some of the players.
The
you think about the transition, too, from the game. I mean, you're talking about a wide-open offense. Greatest show on turf was years ahead of what we see in college and pro football. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Heisman Trophy. Also talking about some players in college that can make it on the next level in the NFL. Keep it where it is.